a subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, April 5th, 2005, and we're here to continue the public hearing on House Bill 5032, which is the budget bill for the Department of Geology and Mineral Resources. I will open the public hearing on House Bill 5032. And what I'd like to do first is call Gary Lynch forward, if I could, to address some issues that were raised in yesterday's hearing around the dispensation of the revenue that was generated by the fee increase. And members, if you have questions, I would urge you to just make it known to me, and I'd be glad to break in. Mr. Lynch.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And I've got to start by apologizing because we gave you the number of 100,000 yesterday. And there's an explanation for that. We're not, and I'll give you that. But it was an error. And the error was that we used that number to explain how much the fee increase raised. What that number really was at the beginning of the 03 biennium was what we expected it to raise. So, and actually the range was between 40,000 and 140,000. The number used for the projection was, we thought, conservative by saying we thought it would raise 100,000. However, it was tied to production. And so if we start from that point, recognizing that, you know, we did make a mistake yesterday in saying 100,000. It was the correct projection. It is not actually what the fee increase raised. It gets a little trickier to say how much did that fee increase actually raise, and you could do it two ways. We could get very detailed, look at each site and the amount of production that occurred, compare the fees. That would take some time. But if we look at what the expenses were from the 01-03 biennium and compare them to the expenses of the 03-05 biennium, I think we can intuitively figure out approximately how much that raised. And hopefully, and if that's not satisfactory, we'll get you something else. But when we look at it in the 01-03 biennium, the program was $54,000 in the red. That difference is made up for by the indirect costs that we pull out of. In 03-05, what we see is a deficit of $92,000. So, you could say what happened there. In fact, we were more in debt in 03-05 after the fee increase than we were in. It's made up by program expenses that occurred, and I'm just recently saw this. But so, in our analysis, what happened is we have a system that is based on production for a significant part of our revenues. And what's happening is we have 100,000-ton increments. In other words, you go from 10,000 tons to 100,000 tons, and there's a fee. 100,000 tons to 200,000 tons, and there's another fee. And what's happening is those larger increments are literally swallowing. There is no increase in fees to most operators as a result of that. If we look quickly at aggregate revenues in 01-03, they're approximately $122,000. After the fee increase, $1.2 million. If we look at aggregate revenues for this current biennium, they're $1.2 million. The actual numbers would be $1,220,000, $1,228,000. So, and yet that doesn't necessarily reflect that we had an increase in fees of only $8,000. There was more than that because it had to pay for program costs. Now, the only increase in terms of personnel that we had was one reclassification in the oil and gas program that went from an NRS2 to an NRS3 that amounted to $4,000 a year. If we don't do that, we're in trouble because the person was working out of class. And that had already been downgraded, by the way, from an NRS4 to an NRS2 while he was trained. And the commitment was once that training for the oil and gas program was in place, then he would go to an NRS3. So that was the only raise anybody got. So to me, the answer here is we can estimate what that fee increase might have been. It wasn't what we expected it to be, and it's because we didn't anticipate the continued downturn in the economy, and also the lag effect that we're collecting fees from the year before, which so we hit the low point of the whole cycle in 2003-2005 in terms of production. And that's why, and I think you heard Mr. Engstrom say yesterday, we would love the idea of going to ultimately pennies per ton, because we feel there'd be a much better correlation then between the fee increases that we've had in the past, that from what we didn't realize much, and possibly the one we have in House Bill 2120. I don't know if that's exactly where you wanted me to go. That's our best understanding, and Director McConnell could probably fill in some numbers that maybe I don't have here for you. But suffice it to say, where did that, you know, I'll conclude with saying, where did that $92,000 shortfall, how was it paid back this time? It comes from our indirect costs, the agency's indirect costs. So does that help?
Do you have any questions on this?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. So if I may reiterate, Madam Chair, that you don't know how much the fee raised. Correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Krepp, we can't exactly tell you what that is at this time.
It appears that it was in the range of $60,000.
I think that's probably a pretty good estimate. So I want in
$60,000?
It's close. That's in the ballpark, I would say. But I without a very detailed analysis where we looked at literally every permit and compared that to the fee they paid in 2003, and 04, the 03-05 biennium and the 01-03 biennium, and compare that to their production, that's the only way we could get you a truly accurate answer. Everything else is going to be intuitive.
I think this must be complicated by the fact that everything lags a year, too,
and
so you're still essentially feeling the impact of all of this.
That's our analysis, and we believe that's correct, and we're just now seeing, understandably so, an increase in revenue. But we are not collecting on that yet. We're still collecting. They pay a year in arrears, if that's the right term. They're not paying for next year, obviously, because they can't tell you how much they're going to produce. So we correct for the past production, and it hit its low point. It went from approximately 50 million tons in, I'm guessing, 2000, somewhere in there, to a low point of 38 million tons in 2003, and that in a sense was taking, had we not had the fee increase, we would have laid off staff. As it was, we cut back on staff and sought other revenues. And the other point is, when we started, I testified before this committee back then, was that we knew we were in a hole, that the industry hadn't paid for everything that we did in the program. And that we have always sought out competitive grants to make up the difference. And it's borderline for a regulatory program to do that. We've been successful, but we lost a federal grant when some of the federal money started drying up. We picked up one project with some OWEB money. We got a bounce out of that, and we picked up Columbia County, and at the same time laid off staff. Or not laid them off, temporarily cut them back.
I'm sorry, I hijacked your question.
No, that's... So yet when you brought the fee increase to us, you thought that it would raise $100,000.
That was we said between 40 and 140,000, and used 100,000 as what we hoped to get. That was our projection.
So your program's been operating in the red for a number of years is obvious. And your proposed fee increase, again, how can I, as an individual who may choose to vote on that, how can I be assured that, number one, it's going to bring you the revenue that you say it will, and you're giving us a hard number of 49,000 some odd change. How can I be assured of that, number one? And then how can I be assured that you're going to do what you say you're going to do with the money?
Representative Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, and thank you for the question. And all I can do, we are where we were last time. We're projecting that's what's going to happen, that it will raise 40. In this case, the projection was between 40 and 70,000. We settled on 49,000 because we had to give a number here. So is that accurate? Well, all I can tell you is it appears that production is heading upward. We know it's heading upward. And it does tend to follow the economy, and the economy is following it. Now, whether the slope is like that or the slope, you know, which one of these slopes is going to be the economy over the next 2 years, I don't know. But the part of, I think, the answer to that is, and this is subjective clearly, is that thanks to you folks last time, which we did ask our customers, do you think we're doing a good job? And 98% of them, and we got a approximately 400 of the 600 individuals we have wrote back and said, which is a pretty good sample size, that the program's customer satisfaction was satisfactory or better at a level of 98%. 82% of those said it was very good to excellent. So from the people we serve, the permittees, they seem to think we're doing a good job on it. And I'd love to tell you, I can tell you, I have a good crystal ball here, and this is how much money it's going to raise. But we're in the same dilemma, and we're going to be in it for a while until we have these increments that are 100,000 tons, and we shrink those in a way that we can look at maybe pennies per ton, which is the way other people do this in this sector. So, and I know I'm rambling on here and may not be giving you the answer you want, but we're more confident this time that 49,000 is only going to get us part of the way there. And we're still going to, just like last time, competitively seek grants, continue our contract with Columbia County, but I think we're in much better shape. And what I can't tell you that's part of this equation is we may see a bounce we didn't think of from the fee increase last time. As production goes up, some of those are going to start moving into new increments as we see production going up. So, unfortunately, we're victim here is I don't want to use we're not a victim. The difficulty is trying to predict, have an accurate crystal ball that tells us how much production is going to occur in the state in the next 2 years.
Now, Representative Krupp also raised an issue around the certainty that the money would be spent, what I'm assuming is in the mine land reclamation programs. Is that what your question was?
Yes.
So can you talk to us about who the customer base is for all of the programs? And I think specifically, do all of the programs in the mine land reclamation program serve the same customer base?
Madam Chair, yes.
So whether you put the money in to shore up one part of it rather than another part of it, the end result is that you're maintaining a service level to the same group of people.
Madam Chair, that is correct. The program two, and when I talk, and I said programs within program two, and that may have been confusing. We have our awards program. That's solely for the mining industry. We have our rehabilitation program of old sites that were pre-law. That's all in the mine land reclamation program. And monies from this program don't go to support program one. I mean, they have their own funding mechanism.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Yeah, it's as good as I'm going to get, Madam Chair, and my parting comment, and then I'll leave this subject alone, is that if you had a decrease in total tonnage, as you say that you did, and that did not get you the level of revenue from the fee increase that you thought, in business, generally, when you have a decrease in business, that means you decrease your business activities associated with that. That, I think, would have been a more responsible direction than running an extra $92,000 in the red. I will say this, Madam Chair, that if, in fact, if you have been behind the curve all of these years and the industry is not paying for the services they're getting for as a whole, and you have to run in the red, then I think you should work it out with the industry to get to that point where you are static. So that you don't have to run in the red, so you don't have to do things that are marginal on the edge, so that you don't have to keep coming back here time and time again for fee increases. Moving to a different type of system, I think, is very wise, one that better accurately captures the levels of output so that you're actually paying for your services, and that would be all that I would have to say with this, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Shaw.
Thank you. Mr. Lynch, I believe everything you said, and I'm not against you guys. I'm ready to vote on your budget. But you know what? Your description of how this fee is done and carried out and collected is about clear as mud. But the problem here isn't what's going on. Your equation, how you collect these fees, these increments of 100,000 tons, why don't we just take 100,000 tons, divide it by 50, and apply that to every ton that's mined out of the ground, and then charge them a bill? That, you know, you'd know exactly. 2 years from now, if nothing changes, we're going to be right back here having the same conversation again. So that's what I'd like to see you doing. Now, I don't know what the rest of the chair members think, but it's about as clear as mud for me. A geological comment there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just more of a comment and then a question. I share the concerns of other committee members and frankly feel that your biggest problem has been that you've got a system for collecting that's not the best. And obviously penny per ton is going to be an improvement. I hope that will go forward. I'll ask a question about that in a moment. But we see other agencies with the same type of problems, and they have an ending reserve to take care of this problem. You're a very small agency, depending on a revenue streak that is volatile. And when that changes a little bit, it tweaks it a bit, you're in trouble. You've only got a five-man staff or six-man staff for getting out there doing this. You lay off one of those people and have to retrain somebody later. It's going to be expensive. And your customer base is not going to be happy that when they call up and want advice or want an inspection, you can't send anybody. So I imagine the number of sites you're looking at probably hasn't changed much. Just the amount of aggregate coming out that has. I'm guessing that's to be all true. So I would caution that not only you make this change, but that you follow suggestions of Representative Krupp. That,
I love the promotions you
get. I have two hats I wear sometimes. I don't wear either one well. And think about building an adequate reserve, because otherwise you will be back to doing this again. And so think not only of just getting by and dealing with the problem you've got, but building an adequate reserve based on the history of the last 10 or 15 years of ups and downs of the business and where you might end up at. Having said all that, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Question. You and I had a short conversation yesterday after committee that I think was an important one, and that was how the aggregate business is becoming almost one business. And as conglomerates are formed, even foreign interests coming in, buying up an Australian company, buying up a lot of the aggregate on the West Coast. And the way you're talking about doing the fee now should help protect the small producer and help prevent that monopoly from forming. And I want to, on the record, what you told me yesterday, because I think it's a very important point. I wouldn't want to be in Southern Oregon only able to get my aggregate and concrete from one outfit. I wouldn't want to be there doing that. I want to have some choices and some competition in the market.
I have to make a comment on that. Mm-hmm. I think that your observations about the direction that the industry moves in is very right on, and I do agree with it. I think that the amount of the fee has very little to do with the consolidation within the industry. I think what we've got are regulations around the Endangered Species Act that are impacting the ability to bring rock out of riparian areas and do bar scalping, and we have huge problems in the land use arena right now that are just throwing major uncertainty into this sector. And that those are the real reasons that this is as unstable as it is right now, and that people are looking at a great time to retire out of here, basically. One more point, though, is that the comments around the reserves, I think, are very well taken, because from a prudent management point of view, you want to have at least 3 months of reserves in your program just to take care of the cash flow needs. But I would also caution that there are issues here around the industry's ability right now to absorb that much of an increase And what we want to do here is create opportunities for people to create jobs in the state of Oregon, and that ultimately that's going to benefit the industry and churn more need for rock. And so I would hope that as you look at moving into a more stable reserve situation, that you do consider that there has to be some attention paid to the effect that this is going to have out there in the real world.
And I would like to respond. I look at those issues with you, and I agree. Fees are only a small part of it, but so something, a small part we can take care of and help out with. And there are other issues, agricultural issues. Some of the best aggregate is under, happens to be under really good farmland. What do you do with that? We want to protect our riparian areas, but we have to balance that against industry, and I agree with that. But I would not give it all up from that point of view either. I don't think you're asking us to. It's a tough deal. I was very surprised, frankly, by one figure he gave me yesterday, which was the total aggregate business in the state is as small as it is. It's $250 million, if I understood the figure right. And so they cannot tolerate huge fees, and I understand that, too. I thought the aggregate business was a much more lucrative and larger larger book of business than I found it to be. I was surprised it was so small.
Well, and I think we ought to recognize also that this is a low point for the industry. This is not what you'd call the glory years of aggregate production in the state of Oregon for the reasons that I outlined. We've actively stomped this down between the economy and the regulatory issues. This is depressed right now.
Chair, I just have to say, we're importing gravel. It's just the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my whole life. They were importing an abundant, in other words, could be cheap commodity. We're barging it in. I just cannot emphasize my disgust with that enough.
Okay, I'll repeat this one in Tuesday.
I did a little calculation last night considering the size of this budget and how far we have to go. We'll be through the budgets in this building in about 14 years. Okay? Not to belabor the point of the size we're dealing with here. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lynch. We much appreciate your indulging us in this discussion. And I will call forward Director McConnell to conclude the discussion around the agents.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I'm the director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. I would ask everyone if they have their LFO folder, we can go back to that on the presentation. I have just a few more things to take us through. Primarily, I'll be looking again at agency-wide and talking a little bit about the funding structure for our Program 1. We left off yesterday.
Where are you in this book?
Yes, I am under the presentation tab, and on page 37, and that's in the LFO. Mr. Siebert, is it?
Right, the very first part of the book.
Yeah.
Here.
And what was the page number?
Page 37, Madam Chair. Where we left off yesterday, I had offered a slight history of our 01, 03 and special session cuts and kind of setting the environment for where our overall agency budget is right now. So I quickly want to take you through some of our budget drivers and challenges. We'll look we'll brush over the policy option packages, and I don't think we'll spend very much time on the legislation since we've spent quite a bit of time on that already, which is our fee restructure or fee bill.
And I detect from Director Shetterly a need to move his budget back on schedule.
Right.
I feel that need, so abbreviated presentation would be
absolutely
much appreciated.
Actually, if I there's just a couple of presentations. If you go to the next page after that, you'll see the one color diagram that we do have in here, and this is, I draw your attention, this is a schematic of the agency of our organization. We have Program 1, which is our geologic survey and services, Program 2, which is MLRR, and this is basically how our funding structure works. If it's a federal fund or other fund, that position is funded through what we would call the soft money or other fund, federal fund money. If it is green, it is funded through fees. If it is white, it is funded through general fund. And we primarily use general fund for our internal services, the ones that we don't collect for our indirect costs, and we use it for our professional staff to use them as leverage to be able to pull in those federal funds and other funds. And that is very, I very much want to draw your attention to that, because we are really at capacity right now of being able to leverage and bring in more for any of our programs, or to be able to initiate new programs, because we just don't have that leverage right now to be able to accomplish that. If you look at the next page, you'll see just a graph of how the ratios between federal other fund and general fund looks like, has folded out between the 1995-97 to now. And essentially, the next page will show the same thing, only in a historical perspective. The ratio between the general funds and what we have to capture from federal funds and other funds to be able to keep a flat staff, our flat FTE, keeps that ratio keeps, and that gap keeps widening. And I just wanted to remind everyone of that, that, again, it leaves us in a little bit of a lurch on trying to keep our programs going.
70 years.
If we skip on over then to page 44, we go into the governor's recommended budget, and Ms. Pearson gave a very nice summary of that yesterday. Essentially, for our essential packages, there's nothing that's terribly different from that, other than some decrease in an inflation factor caused by the funding of the pension obligation bonds, and that's statewide. That's nothing special to our agency. We do have the request for the fee restructure, which we have discussed. Any other changes we've made have been in S&S and some staff reduction. And we did have the permission with one of our policy option packages to accommodate an additional federal fund, other fund position in our policy option 102, if that is allowed to go through. And again, that would be a federal fund, other fund FTE for that.
Can you, in your policy option package, can you talk to us about what the position is going to do?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. This is a policy option. If you skip to the next page, it has a list of the policy option packages. It's package 102, which is our earthquake response. Primarily, this would be a person that would be in our geohazards engineering to deal with the seismic needs assessments for the seismic rehabilitation for public schools, K through 12, community colleges, universities, fire, and then emergency facilities such as hospitals, fire stations, and police stations. That is linked to ORS 455.400, which is which mandated us to look for federal funds for that, and to Senate Bills 2 and 3, which are being introduced this this time. Page 46 is gives a breakout of our other fund and ending balances, and we've actually gone through that now when talking through the fee restructure. The thing to point out, as Mr. Lynch pointed out, is we do require that both of our programs have an ending balance, or have at least a negative balance, or a positive balance. So we accommodate any negative ending balance in the MLRR program by pulling that back out of the other funds that's in the indirect costs. 47 is a list of what our other fund sources are, and Ms. Pearson gave us that list yesterday. It is primarily from our permit fees for MLRR, oil and gas fees, other fund projects, Nature of the Northwest sales, and other revenue. That all is directly related to our programs or our projects in Program 1, which is the geologic survey. And then the last page, and I'll hand out an update, simply gives an update of or a list of all of the legislation that may have a fiscal impact to our agency. And, of course, that's about a month old now, so just an update of where these bills stand right now. And that concludes our presentation.
That was
Madam
the
Chair.
Fastest agency presentation I've had in a long time.
That's because I left the room.
I would be happy to repeat any of it for you.
Are there any questions or comments for Ms. McConnell? With that, then, I thank you very much for doing that as quickly as you did it. And what I'll do now is ask for public testimony, and we had a sign-up sheet in the back of the room, and I'll call forward right now Mr. James Bella.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
thank you so much. Mr. Bella, thank you for joining us today.
You want me to start now?
Yes.
My name is James Bela. I live at 3412 Southeast 160th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. I have advanced degrees in civil engineering and geology. And since 1991, I've been the president and founder of Oregon Earthquake Awareness. Interested in earthquake safety in the state of Oregon. I'd like to just make a few brief comments about the Mineland Reclamation because I did aggregate reclamation for the U.S. Forest Service in Baker, Oregon, when I first came to Oregon. I think it would be helpful to the agency to have a tracked cost per site for the number of sites that they have, and at some point it would be obvious where the thresholds are. In other words, if 20 sites cost any different than 40 sites. So I think if you have a basis on cost per sites, you can maybe deal with the revenue issues otherwise. The thing we found with the Forest Service is that people don't always do the right thing, so it's important to have somebody on the site to see what's actually going on. Even people who said they were going to do A, they did C and Z and Q, and so it's important to have people on the site, but I think the industry should... maybe there needs to be a kind of a core basis for costs, and then percentages, pennies per tons above that can track the blips in the economy. But, the reason I came today is I was hoping that maybe we can affect kind of a core change in how this agency is viewed in the legislature. For the past 30 years or more, the modus of operandi has been to write the agency into statutory responsibilities, and then during the budget fights say, well, this is our responsibility, so that's been kind of the safety valve. But now that we have a new agency director who really hasn't been an architect or too long a participant in that philosophy and method of operation, maybe I was hoping we could move beyond that to make the agency more accountable and useful to the citizens of the state of Oregon. If you go to their website, they talk of themselves as being an independent agency. And the staff said that I don't have their budget. They said it was going to be on the table, so it's a little hard at a public hearing when I don't have their budget. But just looking at the bill, about half of their funding is, if I'm reading this right, is from $2.9 million from general fund, but $2.2 million from federal funding. And over the years, as I've been looking at the earthquake safety issues in Oregon, I really have felt that the independent nature of the agency has created an agency that is more interested in order to survive, to basically they only support what brings them money. So you can't have a developing philosophy in, say, in the earthquake problem. For instance, we tried to get early on, we tried to get through their board, and they also have a position on the Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission. In the early 90s, we tried to get them to support having tsunami buoys in the ocean, and they just were silent. And we know now that that finally did develop, although it's not as adequate as it needs to be, and it's being upgraded. But and another, this map is the design map in the Oregon Building Code for residential structures, and the state of Oregon, the Building Codes Division, has arbitrarily weakened the standards in different places. The red is areas that are supposed to be a higher design value in the national standard. There was one in Klamath Falls. There was earthquakes there in 93. And up in the top in Milton Freewater, there was earthquake there in 1936. So it's just there's been a number of these things. The fact that they get this federal money and they like to be positioned as the authority to speak on earthquake issues, but they're really silent on some of the key public policy issues. Like, we have a member of the state Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission. The Building Codes Division is taking the earthquake design provisions out of the building code. If you go to the state of Washington, you have the national standard. If you come to Oregon, home builders have been very effective in chipping away at...
Mr. Bila, if I might interject here, we are here to discuss the agency's budget. We don't, in this part of the process, discuss the policy issues that the or the kinds of activities that the agency undertakes. That discussion takes place in the policy side of the building. And I would anticipate that it would be the Ag and Natural Resources Committee that would entertain a discussion around the policy initiatives within the agency. So it would be helpful to us, I think, as we go through this budget, if you could confine your comments to the budget itself and the proposal that's on the table in terms of funding the programs that the agency has in place right now. The other issue is that we're now approaching 10 minutes of public testimony, and we need to move on. We're actually behind schedule here. So if it would be possible for you to kind of recap your testimony, that would be very helpful to us.
Well, their budget never made it to the table, so I don't have that. But I would oppose the federal funding. I think the state should fund the geology agency they want, and not establish that they can always do it cheaper by fishing out for other funds. I think this extra physician they want to do the earthquake needs assessment is the wrong direction to go. It won't have any benefit to the people in Oregon. It'll delay their earthquake safety. A better policy thing would be just to loan the money to the people that are ready to spend it. I don't think the agency is large enough that it actually needs a deputy director. I think that position had to be created because in the past, the director of the agency was actually a registered lobbyist in Washington, D.C. So much time was spent out of the state fishing for federal funds. So, but I do... you need to look at the extra position in view of the policy of those other Senate bills, which I think are the wrong direction for Oregon. But I do want to point out that they should at least have the courage to stand up that a state agency doesn't take the earthquake design provisions out of the Oregon Building Code. But and I want to be fair to Ms. McConnell because she's new, and I'm not speaking in any way of her policies. I'm just saying it's a chance for a clean start, and these policies in the past I don't think have served the agency, the staff of the agency, and certainly not the public. Thank you for your attention.
Senator Bates has a question.
Madam Chair, I'll make a suggestion if I could. Mr. Bell, we always like to take as much public testimony as we can. Unfortunately, we're pressed for time. If you could give us your testimony in writing, I would enjoy reading through that, and you'd make your point that way to us. And I'm sure you feel kind of cut off today, but that's a good way to bring the information to us so we can sit and read it. So if you bring your testimony to us in writing, it'd be great, and you would be heard that way.
Okay, I'll try to do that as a way to get a copy of the...
We would definitely get you a copy of the budget bill. That's not a problem at all.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. To have you clarify your thoughts about the additional position they wanted in the earthquake analysis. You didn't think that would be... particularly helpful, and so I wanted you to expand on that because I'm not sure I understand exactly why you didn't think that would be a good thing for them to engage in.
Well, it's part of the... This was all set up by the previous directors where they went to the legislature and then they created these earthquake bills, and the earthquake bills use the agency to do these things, so then therefore the agency has to have funding to carry out the statute, and it's just their rapid visualization, rapid screening. It's like standing in front of the Capitol and saying, what's the earthquake vulnerability of the Capitol? Well, you can't tell because it's covered in marble. You don't know whether it's wood behind there or steel, or in this case it's non-ductile concrete, which is no good. But it drags out the time period on a process which is kind of like counting beans, but you're not really looking at the guts of what you need to look at. And I've opposed that at another hearing, but I'd like to get them away from writing themselves into the statute for what they want, but doesn't really serve what the public needs.
So, Madam Chair, so you don't think that the activities they're involved in with earthquake analysis or preparedness today is really getting good results to the citizens of Oregon?
I don't think there's anything. I mean, if after all the millions of dollars they've taken from federal funds, and they won't even stand up and say we shouldn't be weakening the building code for new structures. There's nothing in the work that they've done that's required in the law that you do anything about it. So I don't think it's been. I mean, I can go across the Columbia River and have a safe earthquake code. So I just don't. And they don't have a governing board with earth science background, so they're in no position to. I don't even know why we have a governing board for. They're not accountable to anyone because their board doesn't understand what they do.
Finished? Okay. Mr. Bila, I really appreciate Senator Bates' suggestion, and I would be very interested in written testimony that you would submit to us and make part of the public record. And we will make the agency's budget bill available to you for your consideration.
Well, I have the bill, but not the...
The presentation materials is what you want? Okay, we'll see what we can do on that one.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone else here today that wishes to testify on the agency's budget bill? Then I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5032 and thank the agency very much. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5518, which is the budget bill for the Department of Conservation, or Land Conservation and Development. And welcome Director Shetterly forward and Ms. Shearer from Budget and Management. And switch analysts. Pass our plan analysis. Okay, we're now in public hearing on Senate Bill 5518. And Ms. McGlashan, do you want to set the stage at all, or shall we just turn this right over to the director?
Given the time, Madam Chair, I would just jump right in with BAM's presentation of the government budget.
Ms. Shearer, please take it away.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christina Shearer. I'm the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Analyst. I'll direct your attention to this document that was just handed out to you. It's very similar to documents that you've seen previously from Budget and Management. So again, with your indulgence, I will go fairly quickly through this document in light of our time constraints. And if you have questions, please don't hesitate to stop me. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is in the Natural Resources Program area, as you're well aware. The charts on page 2 are the same charts you've seen for all natural resources agencies. I'll draw your attention to the All Funds chart, where the Department of Land Conservation and Development is in the upper left-hand corner. This agency represents 1% of the total program area, total budgeted expenditures. And on the right-hand side, the agency represents 4% of the general fund lottery fund expenditures for this program area. And just for your edification, the department does not have any lottery funds. It is all general funds. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is entirely contained within the economic development principle in the governor's budget. And again, that principle is to have a positive business climate that invests in economic development in order to create and retain sustainable businesses and family wage jobs. The total budget for the Department of Land Conservation and Development is $17.8 million total funds. The largest portion of that, 58%, is general fund. Other funds revenues are a relatively minor portion of this budget, and the sources of those revenues include transfers from other agencies and charges for services for miscellaneous items. The other large portion of the budget, 37%, is federal funds, and that comes from primarily two sources: Coastal Zone Management Act, which is administered through NOAA, or North
National
Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. Sorry, I just threw a blank on that.
Didn't know you were testing.
And the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or better known as FEMA, and that's mostly floodplain work. On page 5, you'll see the breakdown of the agency's programs. The largest program by far is the agency's planning program, where the bulk of the activity occurs in the agency. That's 76% of the agency's total expenditures. The next big item is the grant program at 22%, and the remainder is the landowner notification program, which is a very small 2% of the budget. Looking at the $17.8 million in a slightly different way by budget category, again, the largest chunk of the budget is in personal services related, to the planning program. Services and supplies at 21% and special payments of 26%. And just so you're aware, the special payments are primarily for the Transportation Growth Management Program, and that's a special payment to the Department of Transportation and local governments in the form of planning grants.
Do you have the breakout of that 26%? What percent is TGM and what percent is planning grants?
I believe I can get that.
Movement behind you there.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
For the record, please.
For the record, Lane Shatterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. My faithful staff informs me that it's $517,000 in transportation and growth management grants, and the others coming out of the rest of the grant funds.
So by far the bulk of it is local grants.
That would be correct.
Okay.
TGM, of course, is just another type of local grant, but yeah.
Okay, if there are no further questions on that, we'll move on to page 7, which is the historical analysis of this budget. You'll see that the 05-07 budget is an increase over the 03-05 budget, due primarily to policy packages and anticipated increases in federal funds. I will let you know at this point that we'll be talking about some technical adjustments to this budget, and we anticipate there will be some shifting in the federal line, and we need to discuss some issues surrounding Measure 37. So digging right into page 8 under policy issues, I'll start off by mentioning that the governor's recommended budget includes all current programs at their essential budget level.
Oh, jeez. We have just been all called into a meeting, and so what I'll do then is turn this over to Senator Nelson. And we will be back as soon as possible.
The House member?
Now, Senator, this is the only time you're going to see no House members.
Well, no, you'll we'll still have two. It'd be an honor to have you, but I'd have to give you a voter registration card first. I understand.
You mean a change? Yes.
We've got our motion. We're not going to work session. I have my own.
Come on, just gavel us over.
Well, okay.
Okay.
Please continue. Yes.
To continue. I'll just start back at the top of this page. The governor's recommended budget continues support for the planning, grant assistance, and landowner notification program as they currently exist in the agency. The budget also includes some new investments for a 30-year land use review initiative that the director will give you more information on, as well as information technology upgrades, coastal atlas updates, and flood map modernization, and both of those investments are funded with federal funds, and a deputy director position. I would like to point out to the committee that there is no funding in the governor's recommended budget for the implementation of Measure 37. Funding for the current biennium, the 03-05 biennium, was granted by the emergency board in January, but the governor's budget went to press roughly 2 weeks after the measure passed, and there was not an appropriate amount of time to come up with a reasonable estimate to include that in the governor's recommended budget. So the governor fully intended to address this during session with the legislature, but there is no provision in the current budget as it exists for Measure 37. And there have been no program reductions recommended by the governor for this agency. Moving on to page 9.
Yes.
Have you all come up with a number for Measure 37 that would be added to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, the agency has developed an estimate and has presented that to myself and to LFO. And we certainly are prepared to discuss that if you'd like.
Mr. Chair, I don't need to discuss it. What's the number? How much more is it?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think it's about $1.5 million.
It's about $1.5 million. That's correct.
That
would include nine positions, a net increase of nine positions.
General funds?
That would be from general funds. That's correct.
Do the co-chair's budgets reflect that, or are they reflecting that?
Mr. Chair, well, as you know, there is no co-chair's budget.
Well, I mean,
there's a House co-chair budget and
the
Senate co-chair budget. And I'd have to go back and look. It's escaping me now. I think there is some funding in there. In lieu of the policy packages in the budget, it would be shifted over to Measure 37 activities. I believe that's the idea.
Further questions?
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Please proceed.
On page 9, we'll discuss revenue issues. This agency, as we pointed out in a previous slide, does not rely significantly on other funds' revenue. Their primary funding is general fund and federal fund. And the federal funding for coastal zone management and floodplain management activities is expected to remain relatively stable. We're not anticipating any significant fluctuations. The agency has requested technical adjustments related to the November emergency board and has received some revised federal funding projections that are related to a policy package and therefore have requested an adjustment to package 110, reducing the amount requested by about approximately $400,000. And again, in the area of technical adjustments, clearly the budget needs to be modified to address Measure 37. That is all that I have prepared for the committee. If there are any further questions, I'd certainly be happy to answer.
I did have a follow-up to what Representative Schaffler asked. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically, if you're looking at the possibility of $1.5 million, so what you anticipate, unless there's a new source of funding that we don't know about at this point, then that would be a shift from your current planning positions, because the majority of your, the majority of your positions are in the planning function. So you would be looking at shifting some of those FTE over to dealing with the Measure 37 claims. Is that what you're...
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, is that if the additional funds are not provided, is that it? Yes. When we get to a further discussion about the Measure 37 proposal, I think the information we would provide is that we have two planners working full-time on Measure 37 claims, a total of 17 positions right now in the department dealing with the measure to some degree or another. And that would become, for the next binding would likely be the focus of the work of the department without some additional resources for staffing to deal with this so that we can address the other program elements.
So just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, what would be helpful, and I don't know, as not an official member, maybe I can't request this, but just to see if there was an additional positions established, then what in your work plan isn't going to get done, because obviously you're not going to be able to tell these folks you're going to take on this new task under Measure 37. So that would be helpful for this committee, is just to see what are either work tasks are going to be postponed, what services for the public aren't going to be performed because that workload will be shifted over to Measure 37.
Yeah, have a 180-day time limit.
Too. We have 100. Thank you. We have a 180-day time limit. Do you want me to try and answer that now?
Yeah.
Okay, sure, Mr. Chair, member of the committee, Representative Dingfelder. It's hard to say what won't get done. I can tell you what we have is this. We have virtually all of our non-dedicated planning staff working on ballot measure 37. When I say non-dedicated, we have the position that's funded by FEMA dollars that we can't use. We have the Ocean Coastal Program positions that are funded by federal dollars that we can't use. Otherwise, we are using our specialists, our farm forest specialist, our urban specialist. Our economic development team has now been infected with the Measure 37 bug, and it is extended to our field staff as well. So now we actually have people in our regional offices who are having to pick up some of that workload. What that means then for if we can start out in the regional offices, that would be less contact with local governments dealing on plan amendments and other planning projects that they would typically be coming to us for assistance on. In the economic development team, same thing. These folks would likely be much more devoted to spending time in their cubicles here in the Salem office evaluating Measure 37 claims, and we're already seeing the impact of this on that team in the limit that it's imposed on their ability to get out on the road and dealing with economic development planning in communities, and with our farm forest specialist inquiries that are coming in that typically would come to him about the application of Goal 3 and Goal 4 to certain planning issues, either from local governments or from private landowners, are getting answered as they're able, but they fall to the second tier because Ballot Measure 37 really demands that high-level priority attention. So those are the kind of things. It would be working with communities, working with the other stakeholders in those non-mandatory areas that we simply would not be able to do.
There's one last follow-up.
Yes.
I promise. Sure. Periodic reviews, is that considered mandatory? So would periodic reviews, because I know we've been trying to provide better service to municipalities. I know the League of Oregon Cities have worked a lot on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dingfelder. There is a statutory timeline for dealing with periodic review. My anticipation is we will continue to meet that. For one thing, we have a bill this session that is designed to further modify periodic review requirements, which should make things simpler for communities and to some extent ease the workload for the department by focusing periodic review more narrowly. I think we can accommodate that, and it is a statutory requirement. Granted, if we don't make it, there's not attorney fees and damages that are associated with failing to make that deadline. So if push came to shove, I can tell you where the priority would fall. But my expectation is that we would be able to do that. We'd put a high priority on that because of the statutory expectation.
Representative Schaffler.
No, it's funny, we all voted against taxes, yet we voted, I'm talking as a state in general, voted for what amounts to a new division of your department. It just doesn't quite add up. Right here it doesn't add up.
Well, correct.
Out there in society, somehow it adds up. But anyway, my question is, on the best case scenario, you get some money, you put those nine folks to work, these other folks are talking about, you keep doing what they're supposed to be doing. Worst case scenario, you don't get anything, things go to hell in a handbasket. Do you see ever a time, and I'm asking you to speculate, which isn't fair, but where the load could get so great that you would just have to say, we're just going to cut off everything right here and wave all these people and push them out the door with their building permit? You won't give them their building permit. You see what I'm trying to say? Where you just have to say, we're going to cut it off right here, somehow weed through and take the biggest ones, and then just say, okay, we're going to waive you. See you later. We can't deal with you. You ever see that happening?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, that is sure a worst-case scenario. I really don't, and I don't want to go on record saying I anticipate that. We've got a dedicated crew. We've got folks who are already putting in more time than they should be on this. We would manage. I just can't see a scenario where we would just start waiving things. And frankly, I think there's a good possibility that if we start granting waivers that are not, in fact, authorized under the measure, we incur legal liability for that as well by acting outside of our statutory authority. So I think we have to be mindful that a decision just to start waiving is not in itself a savings or a way to avoid liability.
Briefly, and, you know, I hope from a laborer's perspective, these folks can only do so much work, and then they got to, I mean, they can only work so much, and then they got to go home. So I how much more can they expect?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, that is absolutely true, and in fact, we're already feeling the impact of that because, frankly, these are folks in the economic development team whose passion is in working with communities in economic development. And on the planning perspective, being out in city halls and helping them with urban growth boundary expansions and plan amendments to facilitate their local community objectives. And it's very hard for these good professionals to be taken off of those high priorities for them and be assigned to the work that they have, not only in terms of the workload, but also just the nature of it. I am concerned that it would be an awfully hard biennium to have to get by with the crew that we have all devoted to the extent that we are currently on ballot measure 37. And frankly, the numbers are still increasing. I think it's inevitable that we would still be back at eBoard asking for more staff positions if we didn't get them now. But we'd be further behind the eight ball by then.
Mr. Chair, one more, and then I'm going to shut up. Hopefully we'll get some land use bills out of this session that will add some flexibility and reason to our land use system, take the burden off of these guys, and allow people to use their land and make money and create jobs. That's what I'm... All those good things. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, we are at the table in the discussions around ballot measure 37. There are any number of iterations of bills to modify the measure. We can be hopeful that something will pass or that a combination of things will pass. Right now for our budget picture, I have to anticipate current law going forward, and I think we have to build our budget based on that expectation.
Christina, on page 9, you talk about the coastal zone management floodplain. Lane had sent us a copy of your letter with your concern. We'd changed some rankings. Does that have a connection with the rankings and what this is all about? Do you want to?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, Representative Dingfelder. This gets in response to the rankings that the committee did when we were last before the subcommittee last month. The only thing that really diverged substantially from the relative ranking of priorities that we had presented was to place the ocean coastal program 14th out of 15 priorities. We had ranked that among our top three because it goes with regional staff, it goes with our specialists that provide technical assistance and support communities, because the ocean coastal program on the personnel side are the folks who perform those very same functions but in the coastal counties and cities. The coastal program supports our two regional representatives that cover the coast, as well as coastal planning specialists. And so we saw that as very much of a kind with our regional representatives and our planning specialists, and would strongly encourage the committee as it goes forward to restore that to a relative priority with those other programs, recognizing that it is federal funded. It's been part of the program since 1977. We're not embarking on anything new or different here. And also recognizing that part of the Ocean Coastal Program, and a very major part of it, are the grant funds that come with it that are available through the federal program to coastal cities and counties. And I saw something of a disconnect there, and perhaps a lack of understanding in that the subcommittee had ranked coastal grants, if you look on the committee ranking, as number two on the priorities. And, of course, if we do not participate in the federal ocean coastal program, then those ocean coastal grant dollars go away. And so not only would you not have technical support, planning specialists, and staff available to cities and counties along the coast, you would also not have what we'd be anticipating, about $1.8 million in grant funds available to those communities as well. So that was my point in underscoring the importance of that and its relative prioritization with those other technical assistance and community service programs that we provide.
So, I mean, that's what you were looking at.
Yes.
Yeah, the revenue source for the for these programs is remaining relatively stable. What I was intending to convey here is that there have been no radical changes in the level of federal funding as expected for these programs. It's a stable program, it's a very successful program, and the feds are not showing any signs of backing away. As you know, federal funds ebb and flow in lots of programs, and we're not seeing signs that that will occur here.
Concern from Lane's viewpoint is that we have a down. Priorities.
I'm not sure what the impact of that is, yeah, but it worries me when I see it number 14 out of 15.
Okay. Sure. So let me make sure we get that right.
Yeah, thanks.
So, further questions on any of this?
Mr. Chair, yes. Good staff just said that each of the co-chair's budget contains $800,000 in the general fund for Measure 37.
Oh, Mr. Chair, it's news to me that that's for Measure 37. What I saw, and I only saw the document as it came out yesterday, was that the total of additional spending that was proposed in the governor's recommended budget came to 1.4, and I think the sheet that came out yesterday showed a reduction of $600,000 for a net of $800,000, but in that document anyway, it's not been specified as to what that would be directed toward, and so I don't know if that was Measure 37. This is the first I've heard, but that only came out yesterday, so I'm not surprised we're just catching up with it.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
And Representative Schaffer, Representative Dingfelder, it's correct that the documents don't specify. It's my understanding that money would be in lieu of the policy packages, but it is a reduction from the total overall policy packages of about $1.4 million.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further on this issue? So what is our next step here? We're going to take more...
Mr. Chair, I'm at your pleasure. I was going to...
Mr. Chair, if I may, the process so far is supposed to be that BAM does the overview, the high-level overview of the governor's recommended budget, and then the agency will present more detail on its program operations and essentially the budget structure and other issues that are in the Phase 2 presentation guidelines.
Director, or do you want to just continue?
You bet.
On
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Where we're at and what you think we're doing.
Sure. Let me go ahead and begin. I'll follow my outline of testimony, but like a lot of public speaking, my expectation is that your questions are probably going to be a lot more interesting to you than my speech. So if you have things you want to know, don't hesitate to interrupt my comments. I'm sorry she just left, but Representative Dingfelder, I think in our first round of hearings at Phase 1 captured probably better than I did the essence of where I indicated we have been moving the department and where I very much hope to continue to move it, and that is away from an emphasis on regulation and enforcement and much more toward technical assistance. I think that was the way she described it, and I believe that's an appropriate statement of how we see our role going forward and how we best play the role the governor has directed for us to play in the in his economic development agenda. That is a non-regulatory function. That is definitely a technical assistance and function being in city halls and county courthouses and planning departments, helping local communities achieve their local objectives. That's where we have gone in the year that I have been at the helm, and where we intend to go forward with the department in the next biennium. You saw in Christina's outline that the three budget areas for the department are planning, landowner notification, and grants. Really, planning is the nuts and bolts of what we do in terms of personnel. I'll just walk you through that element of the organization. Our planning program includes, as I mentioned earlier, our regional representatives. We have regional staff on the coast that are funded through the Ocean Coastal Program. Those are two positions on the coast that cover the entire coastline. We have a position in Eugene that covers the southern Willamette Valley, a regional representative in Medford that covers Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson counties, two regional staff in Portland that cover them largely the metro area, two in Salem that cover most of the valley as well as Columbia County and over to Hood River County, and then we have two that are currently housed in Bend that cover the entire region east of the Cascades, although I'm pleased to say that we are, looks like we're very close to locating a northeast field rep. It's been something we have put a high priority on for the last, well, since I've been here. And in fact, we've gone out four times, and I think we finally found, in this case, Mr. Wright, a good fit, somebody with city planning experience who will be able to serve the cities in the northeastern corner of the state where they very much need the kind of technical assistance that we provide. Our regional representatives also participate in the regional economic revitalization team. Teams and represent the department on that program. And also under planning, and I'll go through these fairly quickly, and again, stop me with any questions you may have. We have our economic development staff that is new to the department in this biennium. It comes to us under House Bill 2011. We are fully funded in that, and again, if we can keep those folks from getting overwhelmed with Measure 37, their primary function is to the external, providing technical assistance to local communities in their economic development. Planning strategies, that means Goal 9, which is our economic development goal. It's something that has achieved a very high priority in this past year. And also working with our standing Economic Development Policy Advisory Committee and also with the Governor's Economic Revitalization Team. Again, we were one of the key agencies in the Governor's Industrial Lands Task Force, also in part through our Economic Development Team. We have the Transportation and Growth Management Team that is part of our planning program. They coordinate with ODOT and provide the on-the-ground connection between transportation and land use planning. A critical role and something that we're doing a good job at coordinating with our partner agency, ODOT, on. We provide quick response specific to projects. If developers and communities need design assistance, we are able to provide that and provide grants for consultants to actually get projects on the ground. We also provide code assistance to communities to help them develop their own transportation codes and systems. It's part of the technical assistance that we provide, and also public outreach, which is one of our non-regulatory functions and something we're very proud of. The public outreach that we present in workshops, publications, and technical assistance to folks who need to know. Also in planning, we have our natural hazards program. That's our FEMA position. This ties to one of our policy option packages, 110. We have one position right now that is funded through a FEMA grant dealing with natural hazard planning. I think when you don't have planning that is coordinated with good natural hazard information, you have two possible bad outcomes. One is you develop in places where you shouldn't, and the other is you don't develop in places where you might otherwise be able to if your maps and information were up to date. So it's important for us to help communities maintain up-to-date information on their hazards, and that is the function of that position. Also a very external-oriented position working with local communities as well as federal and state agencies. I mentioned the Ocean Coastal Management Program, and Senator Nelson referred to the memorandum that I sent to the subcommittee on April 5th. that I think fairly well outlines the work that that program does. I did mention that Ocean Coastal funds two of our regional representatives, the ones that serve the local communities on the coast. It also funds a number of coastal planning specialists that are provided as part of our federal grant, and among other things provides consistency review. I know it was, came up last year, a very short notice. For instance, the Corps of Engineers came up with some dollars toward the end of their fiscal year where they were going to be able to put some money toward the restoration of the Tillamook jetty, Tillamook Bay jetty, and required some very quick response to provide the consistency evaluation that is required in order for the federal dollars to flow through for that project. That's the kind of function that our staff provides there. We put those folks into working on overdrive and got that consistency review completed so that we were able to get the Corps to work on the Tillamook Bay jetties within their fiscal time frame. Again, that came on us very quickly, but that's one of the functions that we do there. We also provide on the coast our own a coastal outreach program that provides training to local planning commissioners, a very popular program over there that we're not able to replicate statewide because of lack of funding. But on the coast, we are able to do it to provide training for planning commissioners in the communities along the coast to help make them function better and know better their role as planning commissioners. Planning specialists are also part of the planning program. I mentioned our farm forest specialist. We have one farm forest specialist for the state. Our program is not very deep in skill positions, but it's very skilled in those skill positions. We have one urban planning specialist. This planning specialist takes the lead in assisting cities in such issues as expanding urban growth boundaries and helping them through those processes and identifying the needs that they have to meet in that. I mentioned the natural hazards specialist. Community services, we have a community service specialist that works with unincorporated communities out in the rural parts of the state. Also serves as our coordinator to the government-to-government program, working with tribes, and our coordinator with the economic revitalization team. I think that for the time and given where we are today, two other things in the planning program. One is plan review. That is something that we do. Representative Dingfelder mentioned this while the others of you were out of the room. The function that we have in reviewing periodic review work tasks that are submitted to the program as well as plan amendments, that all is a function of our planning program and public information. We have a very active, again, one-person function, but a very active public information service. We maintain an up-to-date website, and we're very proud of that, that the website is kept up-to-date and current with information, bulletins, and announcements. We publish monthly a land use news that brings subscribers up-to-date on new developments in the land use program. And that person also handles media contacts, public information requests, and public records inquiries as well, and staffs the Citizen Involvement Advisory Committee. We also provide support for LCDC and support for the Local Officials Advisory Committee and the Citizen Involvement Advisory Committee through our planning program. It is the major function, the major program in the department in terms of what we do, and will be critical to continuing forward on that in our ability to maintain our commitment to support the governor's economic development agenda. The second main budget category that we have within the department is the grants program. We have several grant programs that we operate through the department, really broken down into general fund and federal fund. We have a general fund grant program that assists local communities to identify and prepare project-ready lands and to revitalize downtowns, to assist them with periodic review, local government streamlining, that is updating their development code so that they are more responsive to their local needs, and then in the Gorge counties along the this would be Multnomah, Hood River, and Wasco County, we have a special carve-out for them of grant funds that we made available to help them with their additional costs of complying with the federal mandates that are associated with the Gorge Act. We also have a separate general grant fund that is tied directly to economic development projects. These focus on land use planning for industrial sites and undertaking inventories of industrial lands and also, other employment lands. Very popular grant program. That has been very useful in this last biennium. We're looking forward to continuing that to assist local governments. On the coast, we have also three types of federal grants. Basic planning grants are awarded on a formula basis. If you want to look at tab F in our notebook, our department notebook, that shows you the grants on the coast. Basic planning grants that are awarded to communities based on a formula that takes into account population as well as complexity of their planning needs. $674,000 went out in basic planning grants in the 03-05 biennium. We have technical assistance and priority projects grants for things like stormwater management, coastal water quality, and economic development planning. Of that category, we issued $578,000 in grants in the last biennium, or this current biennium. And then we have what are called our 306A acquisition and small-scale construction grants. These are things that actually build things that communities have identified as a need. They may be paths, walkways for coastal access, parks, rehabilitation of historic buildings, of ports, and one, I'm trying to think, we even partly contributed to the Lewis and Clark Trail to the Sea in this current biennium. And of that, we issued $449,000 in grants.
Representative Schaffler.
You know, there's a bill we've been discussing about the trigger threshold of prevailing wage, and it's currently at $25,000. And there's been discussions of $50,000 to $100,000 raising that up. Would that have an impact on these little projects? Probably. Because I imagine once you go over $25,000 on these, or is this just part of a project?
Well, Mr. Chair, these are grants, and Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Schaff, these are grants to local governments. I think the impact would be the local government. It wouldn't be so much to the grant funds. I suppose if frankly, I don't know the bill, but I think the where I would likely see this going is that if it took more dollars to actually build the project, then these grant funds would contribute proportionately less than that. But these grants go to the local governments directly.
So I can clarify what I'm talking about. These small construction projects,
yeah.
Currently, if they're over $25,000, they have to be prevailing wage. If they're under, they don't. We raise it up to $50,000. Well, there's two here that I see that would, if they are construction projects, that would be under the threshold, and maybe they could stretch their money out a little farther.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler. And that's going to be hard to tell from here because often these grants are only a part of a project. They may have local funds. They may have other funds that feed into this. So very often we would not be the only funding source for this.
Thank you.
Mr. Shetter?
Yes.
Going down this list, I mean, it's all coastal, coastal, coastal,
yep.
Coastal, and then the RV cog kind of jumps out at me, and I'm assuming that's the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. And I don't expect you to have this on the top of your head, but I'm just curious if you could provide me with just a tad of detail about what that technical assistance grant is all about.
Will do, Madam Chair. I'd be glad to. And I should mention, I jumped over, but if you want to turn back to tab E, it shows you the distribution of
of our general fund grants, and that has the same kind of breakdown between type of grants that were made in this last biennium. You see the basic planning assistance grants that simply go out to our smaller communities to help them with their basic planning to pay for the planning expenses. We have our Columbia River Gorge grants there on the bottom right-hand corner to show what we've paid to those counties to assist them with their special costs in complying with the National Scenic Area Act. And on the back of the page, we have the breakdown with periodic review, economic development, and technical assistance, understanding that economic development really feeds into both periodic review and technical assistance, because often the periodic review work tasks may tie in with an economic development component as well as the technical assistance. So we prioritized even the technical assistance grants for those that could that had some connection with economic development in this last biennium. But that indicates
it slips my mind.
Yep.
Also, there's been a lot of interest expressed in the Ocean and Coastal Services Division, and I'm wondering if there are a couple of items that I could ask you to provide to me in that area.
Yes, ma'am.
And that would be to go through not the manager position and not the POP positions, but the other positions there. If there is a description, like a job description for those positions, if we could have that information available to us. And then I'm also curious if you could provide us with information about the federal money and the general fund money that flows into these programs, if there's some way to chart it out for us so we can see where the money comes from and where it goes out to. And I'm not sure that it isn't even in here somewhere already. So if you could direct that to us. But what I think would help us understand the dynamics of this program would be if there was some way that you could convey to us the funding sources and then how they're used within the agency and disseminated, at what parts of it go out where. Does that make any sense at all?
I'm working on it.
Okay.
No, it does. I'm wondering what it would look like. What do you want to see?
Well, visually, I'm not real tied to visually. I'm more tied to just being able to have an understanding on the part of the committee members about how that whole division is wired together. From the point of view of the functions that the people that work in it perform, and from the point of view of the financial side of it, how the money comes in and how it goes, what goes out and how it goes out.
I'm thinking. Oh, okay. We'll try and do that, and may follow if we have any. If we think we need some further guidance, I'm thinking, at least on that piece, that it is probably fairly straightforward, at least in the big picture. If you're talking about Ocean Coastal, that's federal dollars. They're going to go one of two places, either to on the personnel side, services and supplies, or grants. That's the only places they go. And that breakdown is fairly straightforward. What you've asked for, and I think what we can get you no problem, would be the more specific description of what each of those positions does within the coastal program. But again, the funding is just that, is pretty straightforward. It's all federal, and it's either going to go to the positions, and what doesn't go to positions, either directly in personnel costs or service and supplies, will be the grant dollars.
So would we be correct then if we assumed that you gave us the total funding coming into the program, that the total of personnel services and supplies plus this page of grants would zero out the bottom line?
Yeah, I believe so. Teddy believes so. Sure, absent any, if there's any carryover or carry forward or anything like that. No, it should be just that straightforward.
Okay. Then probably the job descriptions then would suffice.
Okay.
I think the funding thing you've made pretty clear.
Yeah, I want to make sure Sue knows as well. I think I'm pretty correct in this. It is as straightforward as the funding is. Okay. Okay, we'll get you the job descriptions then.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. On the tab E, you got these planning assistant grants, and the majority of them are $1,000. And I'm sure these little towns need all the help they can get. But my question is, $1,000 broken up, do they get matching funds somehow? Do they leverage just to get more money? What are we getting for this $1,000? I guess is what I'm asking. And would it be better just to have three or four big grants somewhere? Or
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I guess you'd have to ask Rufus. They get $1,000, but for their general fund, that's probably a pretty big chunk of their general fund. And frankly, the smaller you get, the less their planning needs are. So what this really does is provide financial support to their general fund, recognizing that an element of what they have to do, even though they may not have a planner on staff, is either in some cases contract with a consultant to provide planning services, or to provide training to whoever it is on their staff that does their planning, whether it's the city recorder or the water meter reader, whoever it may be. But those are dollars that the cities use for those purposes, and you're right, they're small dollars. But given the small budgets involved, I think it's one way that we demonstrate a state partnership with local governments, by providing them with some financial assistance. We certainly could probably get more bang for the buck by aggregating these dollars and putting only two or three out, but we would be missing a lot of communities that that are able to use these dollars and need them.
Thanks.
Representative Krieger.
Yeah, and I'd like to have copy of the grant application on the coastal zone management. The last one you did, and information about when you're going to do the next one.
Okay.
A very detailed briefing of the five-year plan, and a very in-depth discussion of the 309 assessment and strategies, and specifically all references to marine reserves and marine protected areas.
Do you require any clarification on that?
You're asking for a breakdown on the work task elements of the program.
Make a grant application for that. I want to see the grant application.
Okay. That's straightforward.
And then you have also a five-year plan that's discussed in that. And you also have the Oregon 309 assessment and strategies that has a discussion. Where did that come from? Who wrote it? And who agreed to what? It's quite in depth, and there's many references in there. Remember, I mentioned to you that the agency I felt had moved ahead on that issue outside of 3534 and was continuing to do so. I think it's real plain when you read it that you'll find that it's there.
Okay.
But you have 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm just about done with what I was going to offer in the way of the program overview. Just the last grant element, the grant element was the Transportation and Growth Management Program in the current biennium 305. Together, grants totaled $6 million to that to local communities for development and updating of their transportation system plans, for development of street plans, and also to prepare pedestrian and transit and other transportation-related design plans, a very popular program with local governments. What I'm trying to get through with the best use of time, Madam Chair, if you'd like, I could try and make a quick walkthrough of the policy option packages. Or did you want to talk about Measure 37, which is your preference? So when you were out of the room, we had a beginning of a discussion of Measure 37, and I'll leave it to you, recognizing the time is limited today. I want to go where you want to go.
Anybody have a preference?
Or I can try to do both.
It does seem he can handle 37 in 20 minutes. I mean,
Mr. Shiverly, let's go through the policy options packages.
Thank you. I would suggest we don't try to handle 37 at all.
I am referring now to the governor's recommended budget. I'll just walk through there under the planning program, starting on page 92, under the planning program tab. This begins the walkthrough of our policy options packages that are in the governor's recommended budget.
Is there a page number somewhere I'm missing?
Page 92. And the numbers are... Keep going. The numbers are in the middle of the bottom of the pages.
They're under the tab planning program 001.
About that far in.
Not that far in. Okay, not too far in. 92 is on.
That's correct.
Yeah, right, but that number.
And
ages.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very
good.
Page 92.
Yours is 92.
Mine's 92.
Yeah, yours is 92. Okay.
You're in the black book. It's page 92.
I won't be reading anyway, so it won't be. You won't be needing to follow along word for word. I just use these for reference. The first of the policy option packages is for a deputy director position. We originally proposed this last summer and was supported by the governor in the context of our proposal, policy option package 103, which is the 30-year review, on the assumption that to take on that task of 30-year review would require that additional level of management support. I will tell you that with or without policy option package 103, this ties in back to measure 37. That alone has really underscored the need for a deputy director position at the department. Right now we are managing more than 200 claims. It is a heavy workload, not only in the claim review but in the management. And one of the strengths of how I was able to spend my time in this last year has been on the road and meeting with our local partners, and that is how I have learned what the local needs are and taken those back to help develop department priorities and to implement those priorities. And I'm continuing to do that. I was down to Medford three times last month, and I was even at the Ashland Bakery at noon on February 26th, and neither one of you were there.
We were there at 1.
Yeah, we were. We must have just missed you.
I must have missed you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we were there and you weren't there.
I can't tell you, though, how important that has been in developing what I think has come to be perceived as the new face and working relationship of the department with our local partners, to have the director meeting with the county commissioners out in Fossil, out in Heppner, and making trips to have FaceTime with these folks. Has been of great benefit not only to the department but also to our relationship with local governments, which is what it's all about in terms of our ability to provide service to them. What will be key, especially with the ballot measure 37, and if policy option package 103 goes forward, especially with that, will be what we've seen with George Naughton on loan to us for this 6 months from BAM. I simply could not have managed the program without his assistance. It could not be done. I think this is a critical need for the department in order to maintain management accountability, so that those things the management of the department can be attended to while the external work and other policy development goes forward as well. A critical need for the department in the deputy director position under Policy Option Package 101. Policy Option Package 103 is the 30-year review of land use planning. That is in Senate Bill 82, which is in the Ways and Means Committee right now. It passed unanimously from the Senate Environment and Land Use Committee last month. The thesis of this, and I'll be brief, you'll hear some testimony on this tomorrow in public testimony, is that over the past 30 years, we have gone from a very visionary program to one that is very regulatory in its aspect. And in that, I think we have lost some of the vision, and certainly we've lost connection with Oregonians to why we have land use planning in the first place and the benefit that provides to the state, both in terms of livability but also to our economic development, business climate, and all of those good things. And it's been a 30 years of accretion of statutory changes, administrative rules, court decisions, LUBA decisions, goals, and goal amendments that, again, over the years have just made why we do this hard to see through the bramble of the regulatory process that the program has become. This policy option package would give us an opportunity to begin with a task force dedicated to the review. Would not be done by the department per se or by LCDC per se, but Senate Bill 82 actually creates a task force on land use planning to be appointed by the governor, speaker, and Senate president to undertake the review. This policy option package is for staff support to that task force. These positions, and there are three positions reflected in this policy option package, would be dedicated to support of this land use review task force. We see it as a two-biennium project, recognizing that it would take a while after the session to get the thing underway and moving, and frankly, after 30 years, there's a lot of work to do. And we would hope to have some interim changes to propose even in the next legislative session, but I think that in order to do it right, it will take that two-biennium exercise to engage the public in public outreach and research and review of the land use planning program, and an opportunity then to instill in the program elements that, that we've debated in this building for biennium after biennium, such as more transparent regionalization, review of secondary lands, other issues that are biennial but we are very hard to fit into the fully constructed program. This would give us a chance to put all of it on the table to reevaluate the program from the ground up. One question, of course, is with ballot measure 37. Do you need this? And I think my response is we probably need it more with ballot measure 37 and not less. Ballot measure 37 did not end the program. All of the issues and the regulatory piece of the program that has grown up over the 30 years are still with us, and in fact I think this gives us an opportunity to integrate the program with ballot measure 37 and the policy that it represents through the vote of the people.
Representative Krieger.
I don't think there's anyone in here that's against land use. I'm not. But do you suppose, just a question,
yeah,
if we had done this periodically over the 30 years, it's my opinion that measure 7 and 37 wouldn't have happened.
I agree.
And do you feel like the governor and his staff and yourself, the new commissioner, are committed to finding the answers?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, yes. In fact, when the governor asked me to do this, this was one of the three primary assignments that he gave: economic development, culture of the department, and the 30-year review of land use planning. You don't have to be against land use planning, and in fact, I think proponents of land use planning recognize that this is absolutely essential in order to maintain the integrity of the program. So in terms of commitment, it's absolute. And I would say, too, that with five of the seven commissioners having come on within the last year, the governor has given them the same marching orders. And again, it won't be LCDC that does the review, but they will be charged ultimately to implement it. And that commitment comes right from the top down.
Just an opinion. Why wasn't it done for 30 years with the existing, the prior commissions and directors? They should have seen this train wreck coming and said, hey, we need to address this, because if not, we're apt to really lose something that made Oregon unique.
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, hindsight is a wonderful thing. And you're right. You are absolutely right. There is blame to go around over a long period of time going back. We did have a shot last session. It was House Bill 2912 that almost made it out, that this bill really is a reiteration of. And it just fell by the side as the session ended last time. Before that, I'm not sure what kind of efforts or how far those efforts have gotten along. Do I believe that we could have forestalled and avoided some of the what we've seen in Measure 7 and Measure 37? Absolutely, I believe we could have, and I wish we had.
I can't resist this, Madam Chair. But, you know, we're just talking about your department in Measure 37. In the last 30 years, we've added a big layer of regional government, the Clean Air, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, a generation of lawyers looking for some reason to file an environmental suit. You know, and I'm not saying any of those are necessarily bad in and of themselves, but then you pile all this up, and you know what? It's collapsing on itself, and that is what's brought on Measure 37. It has totally disconnected the average Joe or Joanne from what people have been trying to do. And I wish you all the luck in the world, because like I said before, the very title of your department, Land Conservation and Development, it's just conflicting. You know, people want this, but they want jobs. They want the environment, but they want money for education. I'll shut up, but it's just overwhelming.
If I may respond,
I love every minute.
It's a good discussion, Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler. You can call it a conflict. I think it is. I think of it more in terms of a balance. You've got to have both. There is an element of conflict, but it's a healthy tension between the two, because in order to move forward sustainably into the future with a good environment and a good economy, you have to manage both elements. Otherwise, you're out of balance and you're going to run into problems either way.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in process here. The process of the last 30 years, probably for the last 10 to 15 years, has been on a slow downhill failure course, and we all know that. And we couldn't turn that around. And I'm not interested in where we've been. I'm interested in where we're going. And my biggest interest is that we're looking at something you're going to report back to the legislature, you think, in two biennium with a 30-year land plan. I would ask that we consider doing a little, just, you may be thinking this way already, but thinking of it more as a continuing process. I'd like to see something reported back to the next legislative assembly and to everyone thereafter of how to strip away unnecessary legislation, how to strip away unnecessary regulation, yet still maintain the very balance you're talking about, and that it be a continuing biannual review that is a continuing and permanent process, which we haven't necessarily have had before. I mean, I can't remember, and because I may just don't know, of LCDC coming forward with legislation saying we think this is something we need to do now to prevent future problems. I just don't remember them being a proactive agency like that. They may have been, and I missed it. But my hope would be that this is not a let's go ahead and fix it and then look at it again in 30 years, obviously. But we've learned our lesson, and we're going to make this a continuous improvement project.
Madam Chair, Representative Senator Bates, I've actually thought of that, and I think there's a couple things. First, I said that this is a two-biennium process, but I do anticipate that there would be some things in the short term that this task force could report back to the next legislative session. And some of this may not even take legislation. A lot of it is going to be found in the goals and rules of the department itself and of the commission. So we'll own those and we'll make those changes as we're able. But I think that part of this review ought very well to include just what you're talking about, a recognition of an ongoing review. We require periodic review of local governments. And whether it's every 2 years or whether it's every 4 years or 6 years, I think that the state would do well to take some of its own medicine that we require of local governments to review our statewide planning program to make sure that we're staying current. Because we can see the same consequences befall the state if we lose touch and if our program becomes outdated or outmoded or overly regulatory. And it behooves us, I think, on a regular basis to review that. And I would like to see that out of this 30-year review, one element of that would be an ongoing structure for review of the process.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Senator Bates, what you're talking about already used in most of the other natural resource agencies is called adaptive management. The term used in forestry is you learn more, you then take what you've learned, the new science and the new technology, and you adapt it to use it to achieve your goals. They never did that. But that's exactly what you're talking about.
I would hope that we'd have support to do that. I think it's what would have potentially saved us being in the position we're in now.
Briefly, and I know we're just about out of time, I'll touch on the remainder of policy option packages, if I may, and then...
I think we have about 2 minutes.
Okay. Policy option package 104, information technology. Again, this is whether it ties to Measure 37 or whether it ties to the 30-year review. I was shocked when I came to the department to look to learn the level of information technology and resources the department has. We have one information technologist for 54 employees. In fact, my wife and her first walk through the department remarked, gosh, you guys are sure paper heavy over here. And it is. It's a very outmoded information technology system. Policy option package 104 would begin to address that, and frankly, it gets at our ability to serve local governments too. We get inquiries about planning programs on a statewide basis, and we are hampered in our ability to respond outside of the coastal program with the coastal atlas that is very, very sophisticated and very useful. But again, we're able to do that with federal dollars. We don't have general fund dollars to provide that kind of technical support to the communities that we serve. Policy option package 107 is reallocation of dollars. It's not new dollars, but reallocating dollars, the federal dollars, to the coastal atlas position. Policy option package 108, again, is a reallocation, reducing general fund and replacing it with federal fund dollars so that actually it's to the good on the general fund side. Technical adjustment. Policy option package 109 is another technical adjustment between the department and ODOT, just relating to rebalancing of the transportation and growth management funding that we share. And policy option package 110, I hate to leave that for last, but it's a good one. It's the FEMA map modernization. This is a high priority of the Federal Emergency Management Association, agency rather, to get states to update their hazard maps. They need to get involved in this. FEMA has dollars available. This provides a staffing and vehicle to be able to do that. Again, I mentioned that if you have outmoded hazard maps, you are potentially allowing building in places where it shouldn't be, and you may not be allowing development in places where you should be allowing it. FEMA is most anxious for us to accept this money. Other states are moving ahead, and FEMA is concerned based on their own performance expectations to Congress and to the Department of Homeland Security that they need to get Oregon moving along on its map modernization program. And so we are asking for authority to do that with this policy option package. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm done with our policy option package.
Thank you so much. Any closing comments from the committee members? No? Then what I'll do is close the public hearing on Senate Bill 50.